Planning for classes. The first district to reopen in our area is Rock Island, and it's just a month away. What's being done as classrooms get ready amid the COVID pandemic? Plus, dealing with a canceled tournament in the cities. This year's John Deere Classic was to start next week. It won't. But it's amazing what's still going on even though not a player is in sight. But first, getting ready to reopen. The biggest challenge in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic may yet come. Reopening of the schools. Rock Island Milan Schools opening the first week of August. We talked with Superintendent Reginald Lawrence about the monumental task of opening the classrooms to kids, teachers, and staff.
Yes, I think that we will be ready. We've looked at our calendar. We've had conversations about the potential of moving back. But right now, with the opportunity to do remote learning and potentially blended models of learning, we will be set. We know we're one of the earlier schools in the area, but we've been working diligently to try and put together a plan that will have us safely come back and continue on with academics. As normal as possible.
It is a good point. You are the first major school district to open in Western Illinois. I mean, does that put a lot of pressure on you to get it right?
Definitely. I mean, the pressure is there when it comes to either getting it right. We all want to make the best decisions for our students pertaining to safety and continuing to provide academic opportunities. But there's been a lot of conversation. I meet almost weekly with a number of the superintendents in the Black Hawk region here, and we're always passing ideas, sharing next steps. We really want to try to be in unison and be as consistent as possible. But yes, I will definitely tell you, being the first one out there is a little bit of pressure, but that's why I'm in a position and I think that we'll be ready for it.
Well, and you did mention, of course, the key is the health and safety of your staff, your teachers, the students as well. Is it going to be difficult under the Illinois guidelines for face masks for everyone? I can understand that it'd be easier, far easier for a high school student rather than your kindergartners and your early graders.
I think that it's definitely going to be a challenge. It won't be easy, but I think that over the last months, since actually March 13th, we went into this whole phase. Everyone's been wearing face masks. They've been wearing some type of face coverings. You see it out in public. It's always being promoted on television. While it will be a challenge, I think it's something that, as we always do, we're resilient and we get used to it. I think it'll be a little bit more difficult with our younger students. When you talk about, your kindergartners and first and second graders having to wear masks, it will be a little bit more difficult for them because they tend to touch their faces more.
Sure, absolutely. And they hang around their friends and they don't necessarily know that they're not supposed to.
Yes.
The other thing that you did bring up is the remote learning, the so-called hybrid learning, that you may have a combination of not only learning from home, but classroom as well. Is that something that we can expect at Rock Island School as well as other schools for this coming school year?
Well, we are definitely still in that planning stage. We're following all the guidelines that you've seen from the Department of Public Health, as well as our governor and our state superintendent. So we have a lot of models to follow, but when you look at probably the most effective way to have both in-person and remote learning, the blended model is gonna be one that a number of school districts use across the state, across the U.S. So it is definitely one that we're giving a lot of high attention to.
Boy, the way the last school year ended was such a shame for the class of 2020. I know that you had, real bad feelings about that perhaps these kids didn't get the end to their high school career that they had hoped. What do you hope to do to make sure that doesn't happen in 2021?
Well, I mean, sometimes there's some things that are just out of your locus of control. But we're going to continue to over-communicate. I think the communication piece is just going to be huge. Trying to continue reaching out to our families through all the mediums that we have available. Also trying to ensure that we use technology in a more effective manner. We've all been put out on the spot, and technology is gonna be one of those things that does not go away, the integration of it. So we wanna make sure that we are, we have more professional development. We are more capable of providing this new and now it's going to be normal education through technology.
So what can parents or students really expect in these, some 30 days before school starts? I mean, how should they be preparing themselves for the upcoming school year?
Well, we do know that remote learning is going to be a part of everything that we do. So we want them to continue utilizing technology, continue staying in contact with their school principals, with our district, if there's anyone that needs technology or needs internet connectivity. We want them to, be very fluid in understanding. We know that safety is number one for us, and we are continuing to complete our plans to restart the school year. But we want families to know that we will include them in decisions moving forward. We've collected surveys in the past weeks to find out how they feel about remote learning and the impact it has. But we want them to know that safety is important. And so there'll be an over-communication over these next couple of weeks, continuing to share information online, through Remind, through texting, and on our district website. But really, we just want the message to be understanding, give us a little bit of time to continue putting forth the best plan possible for safety and academic instruction.
Well, and as you know, I mean, there's going to be some parents who are going to be real hesitant about sending their kids to school in the first place. How are you going to deal with that, mm-hmm. with some parents who may not want their kids to be inside a crowded classroom, no matter what protections you do?
Sure, and that's one of the positives about the whole remote learning process and plan that we have in place and that the state has been allowed to use. We do know that there are some students who have underlying health issues, just as their staff members that have the underlying health issues. And so having access to the remote learning piece is going to meet the needs of those families. Again, we know that having a teacher in front of you is the most effective way to educate, but another option is to use the remote learning and to have that integrated into daily lessons.
Now, we've talked a lot about the education part, but school is more than just that. And one area I wanted to get to is actually getting to school and leaving school. I mean, you have buses, you have kids arriving all at one time, you got kids going class to class, and so you have crowded corridors. How do you plan on doing that? I mean, are you gonna try to, I don't even know, do you just stagger the times for kids to get from point A to point B?
Well, we're kind of fortunate here in Rock Island Milan where we don't have a lot of transportation except for our special needs students. So we don't have the busing issue that a number of districts will, but it's definitely gonna be planning, a lot of signage and one-way hallways, certain entrances into buildings and out of buildings. Right now, since we're in phase four and you can only have groups of up to 50, again, it excludes you from having all students in the building at one time. So you will have less number of students in the building, which gives us the opportunity to rotate and pace out, when students come into the building, when they leave the building, when they go to the restroom. We have a little bit more flexibility there, but it will still be a pretty difficult task depending on the numbers of students that might be in each of our buildings.
Absolutely, and school is so much more than, reading, writing, and arithmetic too. We talk about extracurriculars, we talk about sports a lot, but you've also got band, you've got drama, you've got so many different clubs. What happens with those kids?
Well, our hopes are, again, we're gonna continue to follow the social distancing guidelines. It just means that you may have to work in smaller groups. We still want to follow the IDPH and their guidelines on sharing and reusing, whether it's instruments or items. That's definitely prohibited, and we want to make sure that we stay as far away from it as possible. But it's just going to force us to work in smaller groups, to do more cleaning, to use more hand sanitizer, to be more cognizant of the distancing, using facial covering, especially when possible. But it's really just going to force us to be more consistent and to give that needed attention to social distancing and ensuring that we're not sharing items amongst students and staff members.
Lastly, I mean, in the governor's announcement of reopening the school districts, he said he wanted to make sure that the districts had enough flexibility. In other words, Chicago schools aren't the same as Rock Island schools, which aren't the same as Carbondale schools. Every district has to do its own. And they pretty much implied that every district has to be working hand in hand with the local health department. How has that gone? How important has it been to work with the local health department to ensure that you guys are ready to open in August?
Well, as I stated earlier, we meet weekly with my Black Hawk Region superintendents here in the area. We also meet with our regional office, our Rock Island Regional Office of Education. During our weekly meetings, we get a chance to touch base with our local health professionals. We get to chime into the Department of Public Health to just ensure that all the information out there is it's current, it's aligned with what's going on in the state, what's going on with a number of the educational groups. And so it allows us to kind of stay current. But this goes on in a weekly basis and through a number of emails and information that's just shared regularly. You know, if there's any changes that come up from the state level, we ask those questions. And we normally will have someone at the table with us to share information, answer questions. We talk to some local doctors to again, just give us the feedback that's going to be necessary to be as safe as possible. So I think that we're about as prepared as we can be, but we're ready for any changes that come up as well.
Yeah, because you have to be flexible. Let's be honest. That's one of the things the governor said is flexibility is what school districts are going to need to have in case there is yet another wave, which so many people are worried about whether or not we're seeing it now, let alone come this fall. You think you're prepared in case there is that second wave that people fear?
I think we're about as prepared as we can be. We're going to continue to stay in contact with the health professionals. We're going to continue to make sure that our remote learning program is in place so that students can learn whether they're at home or in school. And we're just going to continue to try and use social distancing. We want to use all those practices of hand washing and keeping ourselves prepared with facial protection. I think the only thing we can do right now is to use the current structures that are in place for us and be ready for any changes that happen. We don't know how big or how bad the new spike may be when it comes. We don't know when that'll happen, but it's forcing us all to prepare a whole lot more than in the past. You can't just have your crisis plan sitting on a shelf not being looked at. It's something that we have to look at regularly and be prepared for whatever comes up.
Dr. Reginald Lawrence, superintendent of Rock Island Milan Schools. In a moment, the John Deere Classic without the players. But first, counting on you to be counted. The 2020 census continues in the cities and across the nation.
Why should I care about the 2020 census?
Every 10 years, the census counts everyone living in the U.S.
Count everyone living with you.
Even kids!
Our numbers help shape funding and services.
For all these things.
That's a lot of stuff.
Your responses are safe and secure.
No matter who you are or where you're from.
We have reasons to care.
Shape your future. Start here at 2020census.gov.
Jason Carl is the proud frontman of the group Jason Carl and the whole damn band. But we caught up with him as he played some original work on the stage of Moline's Black Box Theater. Here's Jason Carl with Crazy Life.
Thinking you should and knowing you could, time to just write and you're feeling pretty good, but you're wondering if it would be alright. With nothing to hide, it's easy to decide, just move on over and have a look inside, but you're wondering why your mind is so uptight. Side. There ain't no rules in there. It's a box your brain is in. It's a picture painted in your mind. nothing to lose but an old pair of shoes. You can run around this world almost any way you choose, and as long as things improve, you're doing fine. Keep moving ahead, making some bread, saving up a little like your old man said, with a pillow underneath your head every night. And I'm spinning around in my chair, but I just can't get you over to my side. There ain't no rules in there, it's a box your brain is in, it's a picture that's painted in your mind. Say what's going on today. The real world ain't real no more, it's standing in your way. I take experience over pain every time. You gotta take another look, it ain't written in a book. You can get anything you want, just talk directly to the cook. And as long as all that took sure flew by. Something wrong, and when you're living on the edge, it's a long, crazy life.
Jason Carl and Crazy Life. Jason and the band last played in Milan for a Friday unwind. The band and so many others hope to hit the stage again once it's safe to do so. The John Deere Classic should be getting ready for a week of PGA golf and national attention here in the cities, but that won't happen this year thanks to COVID-19 and safety concerns on the course and off. But the tournament is still preparing for a monumental year, marking 50 years of the PGA Tour in the cities. We talk with Claire Peterson, John Deere Classic Tournament Director. First off, the course behind you looks fantastic.
Yeah, it's been a great year agronomically, plus there hasn't been as much play, so Alex Studeman is pretty proud of the product out there.
Well, you know what, when you announced that there wasn't going to be a John Deere Classic this year, you said there was a number of factors involving the sponsor, involving the PGA, involving regulations, and of course COVID-19 being the biggest part of it. Looking back now, was it kind of a no-brainer not to hold the tournament?
Well, I think we made the right decision. I don't know if it fits a category of no-brainer, but as each week has progressed since the PGA Tour came back at the Fort Worth event, Colonial, there have been more issues. There have been more restrictions introduced as players have tested positive, their caddies have tested positive, players have had to been quarantined in the cities that they came down with a positive test. So all those things we knew were a possibility, and the fact that they happened we're certainly not happy about or take any joy in, but it underscores, I think, the fact that we did make the right decision, not the least insignificant issue or significant issue is our champion, Dylan Fratelli, came down with a positive test, and it might have been he wouldn't have been able to play.
Yeah, exactly. And when you look at what is going on around the country, you're seeing other, as you said, other tournaments that are being held. And they were able to deal with all of the restrictions that were being put on. It really was going to be a logistical nightmare for the John Deere Classic.
It was a lot of hurdles to clear, certainly. And we've all watched those events on TV from the comfort of our own homes. Our feeling and John Deere's feeling was once it became clear that there wasn't going to be able to safely have fans on the property, that changed the equation immediately. That's what people look forward to, being in those hospitality suites, coming out with your family, being in the family zone with your kids, being in the amphitheater on Sunday when the final groups, come down the fairway and a champion is crowned. So we can't forget the fact that there never was going to be fans. In fact, there's hasn't been fans at any event yet, and there's still a question whether or not the event in Columbus, Ohio is going to have fans. So watching the event from your family room, even if it's a John Deere Classic and you live in the Quad Cities, is something that affects the experience dramatically. That overlaid on the risk of, a outbreak or more positive tests. Now we know at a time when that risk is increasing. We certainly made the right decision, and quite honestly, Deere was at the forefront of that, and I give them a lot of credit for taking the safe route.
I know that a lot of people were disappointed, but what has been the local reaction since the announcement was made? Did you get support in an area that you didn't expect?
I personally have had nothing but unanimous positive reaction. People understanding, especially as each week and each month has gone by since the middle part of March and events are being called off. Heck, all of minor league baseball is now called off. It just absolutely made sense to people. And again, the no fans part of it really rang true because for the Quad Cities, at least, that's what people look forward to. It's a participatory experience. And if you can't come out, it's okay in their mind, and it was in our mind, to pause on the athletic event, allow the charitable side of it to continue, which it's doing quite dramatically, and just wait to celebrate our 50th event in 2021.
And those are the two areas I still want to get to. Let's talk about Birdies for Charity, because it is, of course, still going on, so critically important to some 500 charities all throughout Eastern Iowa and Western Illinois. How is it still successful? And you're saying it is doing quite well.
Yeah, it's spectacular and a reflection of the Quad Cities and their generosity. The reason why Tours been given the Most Engaged Community Award to us for 7 of the last 10 years. It's an all-in mindset, and it's not just the athletic event that people are all in for. They understand that there's an opportunity with the partnering that the tournament has with over 500 organizations to be their main fundraising source. And the mechanism of it, which started pretty much everyone guessing the number of birdies, hoping to get a prize at the end and giving money based on what their guess was, has kind of evolved over 20 years to where out of the 20,000 or so pieces of business, and a piece of business would be a pledge, 95% of those now are flat donations. We're going to give our charity $50 or $100 or whatever. Some of the amounts are dramatically bigger than that, knowing that the tournament is going to take their profits, their funds, and guarantee at least a 5% match on top of that 100 cents of the dollar that's going to the charities, because John Deere pays the administrative fees.
Let's talk about what you have called a pause for 2020. 2021 is going to be such a huge year, and so much of the planning is already underway.
Yeah, we feel like we got a nice head start on 2021. We've already got a lot of the decisions made. We're going to have a big Wednesday night dinner with some past champions, including Dean Beeman and others coming back. That's just been rolled over for 2021. We had a history book being written by Craig DeVries, who's done a fantastic job on it. We might have to add another little chapter or page or two after 2020, but that is done and ready to go. We've got our uniforms chosen. We've got volunteer programs that we had some tweaks to in place. We're, except for knowing who the 156 players are gonna be, which we never know until late anyway, we really feel as if we're rolling into 2021 ahead of where we've ever been in this cycle.
And the other last thing is, let's be honest, I mean, we're talking about a tournament that so is dependent on volunteers. They look forward to this each and every year. It's too bad that they weren't able to take part this year, but in some ways, by canceling the tournament, you also protected them as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you mentioning that. It was unbelievable in the sign-up numbers that we had. Even with the uncertainty, we were over 1,000 volunteers who had signed up, knowing that, you know, there were some risks involved, not knowing exactly what the protocols were going to be. But they had stepped forward, which is really emotionally, dramatically meaningful to me. But even with an event with no fans, the players and caddies and PGA Tour staff were being tested, and there were tremendous layers of safety attached to what they were going to experience. The volunteers, unfortunately, were never part of that program, part of that bubble. They weren't going to be tested by the tour. They were actually going to have to sign a release saying that if something happens, they're not going to blame anybody. And we would have needed 500, 600 volunteers just to put on the event, even with no fans. So that risk really didn't seem like something we wanted to get involved in at all. To your point, we wanted to protect the volunteers. And again, look at this from a long game perspective. Make sure we're viable and healthy and ready to continue what's been going on for 49 years for decades to come, even if you have to hit the pause button in 2020 for the athletic part of our business.
Claire Peterson, John Deere Classic Tournament Director. Although Iowa and Illinois businesses are starting to reopen, we know the closures and all the changes in your life are taking a toll. In so many ways, we want you to know you are not alone. So if you feel overwhelmed, reach out to the Robert Young Center or Unity Point Trinity Health in the Illinois Quad Cities, or the Vera French Center and Genesis Health in the Iowa Quad Cities. The helplines are open now and stay open 24/7. Or just type Crisis Hotline in Google to find a helping hand, a friendly voice, a safety net to get you through these difficult times. On the air, on the radio, on the web, and on your mobile device, thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.